Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast. I'm Robert Knowles, and today I'm joined by Gillian Doherty, CEO at the Data Lab and Digital Leader of the Year 2018. Gillian's Data Lab is one of eight innovation centres set up by the Scottish Government to enhance innovation and entrepreneurship across Scotland's key economic sectors. Before Data Lab, Gillian was at IBM and is one of the UK's top 10 most influential people in data, according to Data IQ. Hello, Gillian. Great to have you on the Digital Leaders Podcast.
Hello, Robin. It's an absolute pleasure to join you.
Thank you very much for giving us your time. So before we find out a bit more about what you're doing now, can you tell me a bit about growing up, your influences, and kind of your journey to what you're now doing?
Of course. I guess going way back, I grew up just outside Glasgow in an area called View Park, and went to the local high school there. And at that point, our school didn't have any computers. I loved sciences, so I really enjoyed maths and physics and chemistry and spent most of the time doing those types of subjects. I also loved economics. And at one point, I was the only person in the class, which was fascinating. And when I left school to go to university, I picked the subjects that I was generally quite good at without any real imagination or thought where it might lead. So I started at the University of Glasgow and picked mathematics, economics and computer science because it looked quite interesting. And from there, I got more hooked on the computing side and then specialised, finally did my degree in computing science actually, and then just went out through the milk round as it was at that point to find a role. And I was offered a role at IBM. I thought it was originally going to be in Greenock, which is just outside Glasgow, and I was invited to an interview in Portsmouth. So I got my map out and started looking and thought, wow, that's quite a long way away. And was offered a role there and packed my bags and got on the bus and off I went to the other side of the country and then had a fantastic 22 years with IBM before I came and joined the Data Lab.
Wow, so that's quite a long time with one organisation. I mean, that's a bit more of a rarity these days, isn't it? Sort of being able to join an organisation out of university and get 22 years out of them.
Absolutely. It's. I think the benefit of an organisation of the size and scale and breadth and depth of IBM is that generally you can change roles and almost whole careers. So indeed, probably through those 22 years, I changed role probably every 3 to 4 years. And indeed, when I first started, I was very technical. I worked in our mainframe division and was a kind of system storage system programmer and eventually realized I really enjoyed working with clients. And I went into a technical facing client role and then realized I quite liked the sales element and the business side of it and then changed to that. I worked in the city for a long time in retail and investment banking, supporting clients with IBM products, and then came back to Scotland and then ran different parts of the IBM business in Scotland. So I ran the hardware business for a while, then the client-facing execs, and then latterly the software business. So in those 22 years, I probably had about 7 different almost jobs and careers. So that gives you the opportunity to stay fresh and to challenge yourself and to always be learning, is having those variety of opportunities.
So Data Lab is in Scotland. So you've just told us that you did make your way back up to Scotland before leaving IBM. So you're now the CEO there. What, forgive me for having to reveal to you that not everybody listening to the Digital Leaders Podcast will know what the Data Lab is. So can you tell us what it is and what it does?
Of course. So the Data Lab is an innovation centre. We're part of a broader innovation centre programme in Scotland. So there are actually 8 innovation centres. 5 focus on domain areas and 3 are more focused on technology areas. And for us at the Data Lab, our mission is to help maximise the value of data for Scotland. So it's a big mission. And we are publicly funded on the whole. We do generate some income, but essentially we are here for public and economic and society benefits. We do that through three pillars of activity. The first is collaborative innovation projects, where we work with organisations to identify a novel or innovative use of data science or artificial intelligence that could build new products or services. And we can work with those organisations to find an academic team who could support them, and we can invest some funding in that. Or we have an in-house team of data scientists that we can deploy onto projects to support the organisations as well. Our second pillar is skills and talent. So it's great getting everyone excited about data, but if they can't find the right skills or talent to maximise the value from it, then we're going to fail before we begin. So we have a whole suite and programme of activity in that pillar, from sponsored master's programmes to doctorates, continuous professional development, our executive education programme. And then we're also working to build up apprenticeship opportunities and even support organisations that are active and engaged in schools with data information. And our final pillar is community building, which really underpins everything we do. And that's putting good people in touch with other good people. It's running masterclasses, workshops, meetups. We have, I think, over 3,000 people now in the data science meetup community in Scotland. And we've just concluded on the third Data Fest, which I'm sure we'll cover later.
Yes, and now we'll definitely come back to Data Fest. So, I mean, data and kind of its importance to organisations and decision-making is relatively new. So was Data Lab sort of a full of premonition of the opportunity for Scotland, or have you kind of pivoted what Data Lab does as more organisations make it part of their decision-making? Or sort of has it been a single vision of what Data Lab should be, or are you and your organisation kind of reimagining where you're adding value on a regular basis?
It's probably a little bit of both, actually. I think the original idea for the Data Lab came from a group of industry experts and academics that were challenged with, if Scotland had to invest in a programme to leverage some of the amazing academic capability that we have, who are working with organisations around the world but might not be working with an organisation down the street. And from a business opportunity perspective, where should we focus? So the Data Lab was born out of that, I guess, hypothesis or question. And the mission generally has always been the same. It's to drive value from data. In terms of the activities that we do, those evolve. Those evolve in terms of where we potentially see gaps or opportunities that actually need to be strengthened or leveraged. And we've tried some things that maybe haven't quite worked, and we've been agile in terms of the capabilities and offerings we have under those three pillars to actually support driving that economic and societal benefit.
And have you been caught up or affected in any way by the kind of the press's recent excitements over privacy of data, misuse of data, etc.? Has that in any way impacted you, even if it's sort of perceptually across Scottish communities? Or have you kind of built into your DNA from day one that this, you know, kind of data sharing is something to be dealt with very carefully?
I think we've built it in from day one. I think we take ethics and information governance and data governance very, very seriously. And to be truthful, it has to be built in from day one. Those are the types of questions that you ask yourself about what you're doing with data need to be inherent and built into the teams. It's not a bolt-on, it's not an add-on at the end. What's really interesting is that just last week we had Christopher Wiley, who broke the Cambridge Analytica Facebook story with us during Data Fest. And we also had Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon talk about the use of data ethically. So we take it really seriously, and it's built in from day one. And I think the breaking of that scandal, almost the Cambridge Analytica Facebook scandal, one of the key benefits that's come out of all of that is that we're having the discussion. the general citizen is having the discussion. It's amazing how much more popular I am at parties and dinner parties to have this discussion now, because everyone is conscious of it. And it's really, really important that we have the debate and that we involve citizens in and the general public in these types of discussions, and that there is an awareness of the impact of the data that they're sharing on certain platforms and what has been done with that.
And in terms of, I mean, data science, one of the challenges of data science is its accessibility. You know, large organizations like IBM or people that can afford expensive data scientists can kind of have that natural kind of, I suppose, competitive advantage to use their data. But there are all sorts of kind of pay-as-you-go tools appearing on some of the big platform providers now. I mean, do you see that as a good direction of travel, that smaller organizations can access decent data analytics, you know, perhaps not ever as good as having your own in-house data scientist, but do you see that as a positive direction of travel? And is DataLab kind of engaged in any of that tool and product development?
I think it is a good direction of travel. I think it's about democratizing the ability to use your data better. And no matter what tool sets that you can get access to, and there's a huge wealth of open source tool sets now. There's fantastic capability built into some of the cloud platforms that actually means it's almost drag and drop to get started, whereas before you did have to invest massively both in expensive tool sets but also people. And I think certainly the vendor community, they're often embracing both open source and integration with their proprietary software platforms that actually allows different points of entry for organizations based on where they're going and where they're planning to use data and how much they have to invest in it. So I think it's generally a good direction of travel. At the DataLab itself, we don't develop tools. What we do is help organizations in terms of pointing them in the right direction. So understanding what their challenges are and making relevant introductions and providing advice on where they get started. How do they move up the maturity curve of using their data better? And what tools could they look at? Which organizations or consultancies, indeed, should they potentially be talking to? And I think that's an important, almost signposting role we play, a network role that we have.
So I think it's clearly a huge coup to get the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, to come to your Data Fest. There may be a few people sort of slightly surprised, first of all, that there is such a thing as a data festival, and secondly, that effectively your First Minister would see it as important enough to come along and take part. So do you want to tell us a bit about Data Fest, what it is, why it's so popular, and why sort of politicians see it as important as they clearly do?
Absolutely. So I think probably 3 years ago, we had this crazy idea of running a festival. Now, Scotland is famous for its festivals. The Edinburgh Festival and Fringe is the biggest cultural and arts festival in the world. So we had this crazy idea, actually, could we take that format where we could provide a platform and a few anchor events and then engage our community to run other events at the same time, such that we can showcase great data innovation all across the country. And we were surprised and maybe a little bit overwhelmed by how the community embraced that, even in our first year. So in our first year for DataFest, we had 25 events and we had about 2,500 people engage across those. Everything from school children to ministers to a traveling data art gallery bus to datathons and workshops and debates. And we've just concluded this year's DataFest, which we've had to extend now to 2 weeks. We had over 65 events right across the country, from Inverness and Aberdeen to Ayrshire and obviously Glasgow and Edinburgh. And we provide a number of major anchor events through the fortnight, and then the community run the rest. And that gives a huge capability to scale the DataFest activities, but also it gives a platform that no matter which domain you're interested in, there should be something there for you. So we had a hackathon that had ballistic data from our Leverhulme Forensics Institute. We had a school children competition that we ran in conjunction with primary and secondary engineers called Stat Wars, where they'd to use data to design and predict the next movie hit. We had debates and activities right across domains, whether it was fintech, oil and gas and energy sector, public sector, the use of public data for good, and all the way through. So it's been fantastic, and a real coup, as you say, to get the First Minister to attend. And considering the crazy kind of political moment that we're in at the moment, that she took time to come and talk articulately about the value of data for Scotland and why it's really important, but also that Scotland is the place to come and do this. So she was reaching out to her international audience to say, come and build your teams here. We take the role of the government in this very seriously, and we believe that it could be the next great Scottish invention. And one of the tweets I loved was, during all of the things that are happening in Westminster, one of our visitors from Silicon Valley tweeted, meanwhile in Edinburgh, the Scottish First Minister is discussing authoritatively the challenges associated with implicit biases in training data, which was just fantastic.
Yeah, that's great to have quotes like that, isn't it, from politicians supporting you. I suppose, I mean, I'm not going to say data is cooler than maths, but I think it's a good new way of talking about it. And maybe, I mean, sort of in the world that I've grown up in, it was okay to say you were no good at maths. And it was kind of, you would never admit to not being able to read and write. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder whether as young people start to understand that data is driving so much of what goes on in the world, people's appreciation of the importance of maths will elevate to that reading and writing status where to admit you're no good at it is to kind of admit you failed in your education.
I think you make a really important point. And as a bit of a maths geek, I absolutely agree that it's such a core skill, and going to be even more so with, as you say, the proliferation and use of data to understand maths is going to be key. And I'll tell you a funny story. I have an 8-year-old daughter who last year came home from school and started to say, I hate maths. And that is probably one of the worst things she could ever say to me, because I'm so passionate about the use of maths. So we've been helping her and we've got her some help and trying to make maths fun so that she can understand that she can do it and be confident in doing it and enjoy it. And that's the key thing. We need to help our children understand the value of it, the importance of it, and to make it fun.
Yes, and particularly important as she's a young girl that she, you know, that she retains a strong interest in STEM, which leads us into our second, I guess, our next area of discussion. So you mentioned the First Minister talking about unconscious bias in data, and you've just shared with us about your daughter. So you are a great example of a woman in tech and the women in tech movement. So what are your views on the numbers of women in the sector? I mean, you've had 22 years at IBM, and now you're at the heart of data in Scotland. So what is the situation?
I think we've still got a lot of work to do. I think the numbers and the lack of engaging women across the STEM subjects, and I'm a big proponent of adding the arts to that and the humanities. So I like to think of it as STEAM, and particularly when we're thinking about the challenges in biased data and the opportunity that artificial intelligence presents, I think it's really key that we have diverse teams, including the philosophers and the arts and the humanities involved in the types of discussions we're going to have in the coming years about the use of AI across our society. So we have a huge way to go. I think there's no single silver bullet. I think we constantly need to ask the question, are we doing enough? Are we using language that is appropriate when we're trying to attract girls and often retain women in STEM careers as well? That's a big challenge too. So it's always about asking the questions And we do that regularly. So if you're putting on an event, what's the diversity in the speakers, in the audience? Who do you put on the posters? You know, how are you attracting and showcasing this is an event for all? And it's all of those little things add up to trying to make the industry more attractive, to showcase the amazing things that happen, to showcase the role models that exist. And there's some absolutely fantastic women right across the country who are doing amazing things, and asking them to be role models, to talk about what they do and to excite the next generation into the wonderful opportunities that we've had.
So how, I mean, I've been hearing a lot about bias in data, bias in AI algorithms. What do you want to just talk a little bit about that? Is there a sort of a current built-in unconscious bias into how the data is collected, who sorts it, who then builds the algorithm, and how it's used that is not helping this diversity issue?
I think it's not helping in terms of the work that's been done over recent years. I think the good thing is now we're having this conversation and people are much more aware that if you are training algorithms using biased data sets, which could be because the data sets are inherently biased because they talk about, for example, judicial sentencing in the US, the recidivism rates are generally very biased. So if you're looking at trying to predict which individuals are likely to reoffend, if those algorithms are trained on data that's inherently biased because of the history of reoffending, then you need to start asking questions. Are we training the algorithm correctly? Is it open and transparent? And a lot of the challenges in the past have been, well, actually, it's proprietary. It's been built by a company and it's proprietary, so we're not going to share. And that is a challenge that we need to start thinking about. But the good thing is we're having the conversations and we're asking the questions. And how do we fix it? How do we take steps to ensure as much as we can that algorithms are open, they're transparent, we understand them, we understand the data that's been used to train them and to test against. And we constantly ask that question. I don't think it's ever a case of that's it, we're done and we can put a tick in the box. I think it needs to be a constant reevaluation as those algorithms develop, as machine learning develops and it learns more and more. Are we going back to check and make sure that we are not seeing behaviors that are evidence of biased data?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. So I know your kind of interest in diversity goes beyond women in tech. And I know you're interested in diversity inclusion, in particular autism.
No, absolutely. I think the key thing, especially in this world of data and AI and generally in technology, is diversity of thought. And therefore, we need to be very conscious of all types of diversity, race, religion, gender, disability, LGBT. All of those are really important. And also, as you just mentioned, neurodiversity. There's a great company that we're working with called Auticon, who are basically giving opportunities to individuals with autism to work in the tech industry, particularly in data analysis and in software engineering. And they have some amazing skills and capability. And what Auticon do is they work with companies to educate and train them how to create an environment that is welcoming and supportive of those individuals. And their talent is immense, and we need to be very conscious that actually we can tap into that talent with a bit of thought and a bit of thinking about the kind of environment and support that those individuals need when they enter the workplace. So I think diversity right across the board is essential, not just in tech, but in this future of AI and autonomous systems, that we capture that diversity of thought and thinking in all its ways, not just gender.
And I guess data has this particular challenge that if it's maths-based and it's seen as kind of the, I don't know whether it's the less glamorous end of tech. I sort of hesitate to say that to yourself, Gillian, but it's very maths-based. You've probably got a double whammy there, I guess. That, do you think parents understand enough about the opportunities their children will have if they go into the data side of technology, particularly now looking ahead at the next 15, 20 years. I think sometimes they just don't have the understanding and sort of experience of the world that you live in to understand that there are incredibly good earning and business opportunities were their child to pursue them.
I will completely disagree with you in terms of, as you would have expected, in terms of the exciting role and future of data and AI engineers and scientists. I think more broadly, the talent pool, as I say, we need to pull from many areas. Maths is just one. In fact, one of our first data scientists was a biologist by background. They've been used to working with data from a biology perspective. So there is a real breadth, and indeed some of the universities that we work with are looking at incorporating data training into every single course for the medics, for the lawyers, for the accountants, for the humanities, for the social scientists. And having an understanding about data and the use of data, I think, is going to be key right across our society. I do agree that there's a real limited awareness in parents and the general public about the opportunity. And I think the key thing we can do is tell the stories. Tell the stories about how organizations, whether they be public sector, third sector, or commercial entities, have used data to drive value. And when you start to tell the stories, people understand it. To give you one example, one of our students on our master's course, student of the year last year, she had been made redundant after a career 12 years with HSBC. She had decided to come back and retrain and did one of the MSCs in data science for business. And then she used the skills that she'd learned to drive her passion. She went to work for Volunteer Scotland and using her skills to increase volunteering rates. So it's almost no matter which domain you're interested in and where you'd like to use your skills and your talent, there will be some amazing opportunities to work on really big problems. Our NHS, for example, I've got amazing stories about how they're using data to improve cataract treatment pathways or improve cancer care by incorporating patient-reported experience data alongside clinical data. And by articulating those stories, you bring it to life for individuals who may not be aware of what's possible and what amazing things are happening already.
So that, I mean, I'd love to work with you to share some of those examples and ideas on the Digital Leaders platform, because a lot of these opportunities that you're describing require leadership at the top to understand the opportunity that data will bring to the organization to transform itself. So you were our 2018 Digital Leader of the Year, Gillian. Congratulations again.
Thank you very much. Very honored to be selected.
How important do you think it is for the leaders of organizations of any type to understand this digital world that you've been brought up in and worked in?
I think it's essential. I think we've seen globally the disruption that tech has caused, complete industries being disrupted by organizations that didn't exist 5-10 years ago by using technology in new ways. So it is critical for every senior leader, every board, to understand the opportunities around technology, around data, to understand both the threats and opportunities around cyber, for example. I don't think every organization is doing enough. And it was one of the reasons we created our executive education portfolio of training, is how do we take our business leaders on that journey? How do they get their boards to invest? I'd like to see much more diversity on boards around age, around technology savvy, around cyber. If you went to most boards for commercial organizations, is there someone on the board that understands the threat from cyber for the organization? I'm not sure many boards could say that they do have that capability on the board to ask the right questions around the organisation's resiliency and what they're doing. But it'll be a question that might end up at the board's door, should there be a breach, for example. So I think we need to do more at our senior leaders and create that diversity on boards, be it age, be it capability, background, that is asking organisations whether they're ready for this disruption, because it's coming whether they like it or not, unfortunately.
And do you think there's an interest from the community that understand these things to add sort of business management MBA skills to their portfolio? Because often there is this situation where a CTO or a CIO or a CDO, it's difficult to bring them onto the board if they're a one-trick pony, as it were, if they don't have a kind of wider understanding of business management and the role of the board. So are you seeing senior people in your industry or even junior people in the industry taking more interest in the kind of entrepreneurial business side of what people are doing with data?
I do, absolutely. I think there's a great interest and drive and passion by individuals and that have traditionally maybe what you would call kind of tech roles to broaden their horizons. Some of the most successful entrepreneurs are actually older. They're in their 30s or 40s. They've worked for organizations and then came out and span up a new organization, a company that's potentially disrupting the industry that they were just part of. So I think it's really exciting to see that. There's great opportunity and support to get engaged and to get additional help and training, whether it's through MBAs or whether it's through organizations like the Institute of Directors or others supporting entrepreneurship and other business skills to bring those types of capability to augment maybe the technical background that individuals have had.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more on that. So we've sort of come to heading towards the end of our time together, Gillian, and it's time for our quick fire round of three questions. So brace yourself.
I'm braced. I'm suitably braced here, Robin.
Fantastic. So what one book would you recommend to our listeners and why?
I would recommend Hello World by Hannah Fry. I think it's a really great book talking around the use of data and AI. It gives examples from lots of different sectors and she poses great questions to think about. So that would be my recommended reading.
That sounds like a great book. I've got into the habit of immediately going to a bookseller not to be named on our podcast and purchasing these recommended books. I've got a little pile emerging on my desk of fantastic literature. Our second question is the one person you would love to have lunch with and why?
Well, it's very timely because obviously we had Christopher Wylie here last week and he unfortunately could only spend an hour or two with us, but I could have listened and talked to him all day. So I would probably say I'd like to see Christopher again and spend a lot longer over lunch talking with him about what he went through, obviously whistleblowing on the scandal and where he thinks the future lies.
Yes, he's been through a lot, hasn't he? So he probably deserves a good lunch. Where would you take him? Next time I'm in Glasgow, I'm looking for a...
Oh my goodness. There are brilliant restaurants in Glasgow or Edinburgh. You can't put me on the spot like that, Robin. I would have a long list that I'm happy to share via your leaders group.
Fantastic. You could have gone for the Data Lab canteen, of course.
I think he maybe deserves a little bit more peace and quiet somewhere nice where we can chat more in depth.
Sounds fantastic. And our last question is the one thing about you that our listeners would be surprised to learn.
Well, I guess having a history and kind of maths and computing science and that I love the outdoors, actually. I'm a big skier, but actually when I was growing up, I got really interested in whitewater kayaking and rafting. And one of my holidays, I spent 8 days rafting down the Zambezi in Africa, which was just amazing.
So I guess the outdoors is probably a short drive from where you live, isn't it?
It is. And it's one of the great things about working and living in Scotland is that wonderful work-life balance. In fact, I think it's been voted the best work-life balance in the UK. So that's very good. And actually, I'm sitting here looking out the window in Edinburgh at Arthur's Seat in the outdoors, and I can see the hills right in front of me. So absolutely right on our doorstep.
Fantastic. And incredibly good advert there for leaving London. Seeking employment where out in all the other fantastic cities our countries offer.
Absolutely. And if anyone would like to know more, then come and visit.
Brilliant. That's a dangerous thing to say on this podcast. You may get lots of people taking you up on that invitation. So sadly, Gillian, we are done there. So thank you so much for being on the Digital Leaders podcast.
It was a real pleasure. And thank you very much for having me.
That is it for this episode of the Digital Leaders podcast. Now, of course, we would love to know your thoughts. Tag us at DigiLeaders and let us know. And if you want to find out more about today's guest, head on over to our website, digileaders.com/podcast, and we have all that information there. That is it for this week. I'm your host, Robin Knowles. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back soon with another episode of the Digital Leaders podcast.